unsurprisingly, I'm going to speak about upeka practice, equanimity practice this morning. Tried to think of something to surprise you with, but I've got four qualities on the list and that's the last one, so that's where we're at. But it's a wonderful quality to explore. I just want to say that equanimity is such an important quality in the teachings and in the practice, and it's also very, very multifaceted. It has a lot of different flavors, ways of practicing it, and ways to tune into it. And I will only speak today, or primarily speak today, about equanimity as it sits within the Brahmaviharas. So as a Brahmaviharas is an immeasurable practice. Some of you know some of the lists that appears in some of the other lists in the Buddhist teachings, like the awakening factors, the paramis, very significant in the cultivation of samadhi. It has many, many different appearances. But I really want to kind of say today what I'm speaking about is how it sits within this framework of the Brahmaviharas, how it manifests, how it appears there. So saying that, a general thing that we can kind of associate or with equanimity, or a way we can understand equanimity, is if I spoke last night about kind of dukkha building, and the dukkha builders, what arises with dukkha, what comes with dukkha, and that quality of demand is very, very key. Actually, the second noble truth, for those of you who know the four noble truths, that demand, that craving, that push-pull on experience. Equanimity is the absence of that, the non-demand. And so that's kind of general for equanimity in all its appearances in the teaching. In the context of the Brahmaviharas, it's very much that quality mentioned near the end of the talk yesterday, being equally close to all things. Equally close to all things. I'll say a little bit more about that, but just a few more kind of bullet points, equanimity bullet points. It's a very, very supportive practice and way of relating for us in our meditation practice, in our lives. It supports us not to get entangled in the way we habitually get entangled, and not to get overwhelmed. In the ways that we habitually get overwhelmed. It's a quality that gives us perspective and a long view. That's one of the ways it's spoken of. It's actually one of the ways we could etymologically break down upeka. To see with perspective, to see with understanding, a long view. And it's very much associated with steadiness, with balance, with non-reactivity. And it's also, and this is back to the Brahmavihara, as a responsive quality. It's not non-responsive, it's not detached. Very, very helpful to remember that, because the word equanimity, in my understanding, even for those for whom English is their first language, unlike me, is not a very familiar word. And it's not kind of a word that we tend to use, and we may associate it. It's quite natural to associate it with a form of indifference or detachment. Sometimes even, apathy. Just like, not concerned, being not unconcerned with what is unfolding. And we want to kind of sometimes notice that that's maybe where we're leaning towards.
And then remember this responsiveness
rooted in wisdom. You know, responsiveness rooted in wisdom and kind of a steadiness and a stability. You know? Sometimes the image is like the keel of a ship, you know, that keeps it balanced and steady, you know, within the ups and downs of life, within the storms, you know, on the sea. You know? It keeps it balanced and steady. And so another, my other favorite way of speaking of equanimity, so it's equally close to all things, the other one is unshakable tenderness. And this is very much the equanimity in its place in the Brahmavihara family. Unshakable tenderness. So we still have that tenderness, that sensitivity is there. It's not detached. But it's also got that steadiness, that unshakability, you know, at its core. And equanimity has also, you know, in this context of the immeasurables, it has a humility, you know, to it, which I like. You know, kind of a wisdom and a humility. It's a skillful way of relating. Remembering these are skillful ways of relating. And the humility that acknowledges, you know, that, you know, we have these beautiful aspirations for, you know, our practice, our life, for the well-being of others, perhaps. You know, really beautiful aspirations, and they matter, they're important. But we hold them alongside that humility that recognizes that things are not fully in our control. Yeah? They're not fully in our control, and doesn't our practice teach us that? Yeah? Over and over again. We have the best intentions, the really most beautiful intentions, and then we sit down and just mind goes off into some full-blown whinging and complaint and grumpiness with the world, despite that beautiful aspiration to wish to cultivate compassion. Of course, that's not the end of the story, but just that recognition, that humility, we have these beautiful aspirations, these intentions, and yet, you know, things are not always going to go according to those. Not in line with our time frames, and not in line necessarily with our wishes. And so there's this kind of, we can see it, this kind of approach of where we're really holding, nourishing, you know, appreciating the fact that we want things to go well. For ourselves, for others, yeah. We want that. But we're also acknowledging that sometimes they don't, because conditions aren't there. Or sometimes it may seem like they're not, because, you know, we're looking in a very specific way or in a very specific time frame. Yeah. So this also is significant. And this is the wisdom lens. And so, you know, examples of that, I have it very much. I've got six very beloved nieces and nephews. Yeah. Very, very beloved to me. Not to everyone, obviously. You know, the youngest ones are going to be 17. Well, one already turned 17, the other will be 17 this summer. So, you know, I had quite a long run with them. Oldest ones are 24. And, you know, this is one of the great teachings, right? I love someone, you know, love them so much. And wish, you know, the best for them in every possible way. And try my best to support them, to, you know, achieve that and to flourish. And yet, they suffer some of the time. Things don't go the way they would wish or I would wish. Or they make mistakes and I can see them and I'm like, why are you doing that? You know? But also, you know, equanimity says this is, you know, they have to also make their own choices, yeah, of course, yeah, without interference or control. So, you know, that's kind of just a really, I think, potent example for many of us, you know, just like we love someone, we care about someone or about something, and then we kind of have to hold our seat in that way of acknowledging, yeah, both, you know, if it's a young being that's learning, or an older being that's learning, that they need to, you know, they need to be able to find their own way, including making their own mistakes. Yeah. And also that there will be suffering, yeah, part of the human condition. So we can see that in our relationships and, of course, yeah, also with ourselves. We can also see it in our meditation practice, as I said before. You know, we sit down, we have a certain intention, a certain idea, and then things are going a different way. Yeah. And as we've kind of said, you know, equanimity is part of what allows us to then see what's actually going on. Yeah. And kind of, you know, maybe let go of what we want to be happening and actually then meet the experience, yeah, as it's unfolding, so that we can attend to it skillfully. And with all of this, I really want to emphasize, you know, again, this responsiveness of equanimity doesn't mean we give up. Yeah? We don't give up on ourselves, we don't give up on our practice, yeah? We don't give up on other people. And, you know, I'll just name this lightly, we also don't give up on the world. So we don't give up, and equanimity, you know, reminds us of that. And this practice, what it encourages us to do is to look, you know, say, okay, you know, I can't, you know, if I go back to say, you know, my nieces and nephews, you know, I can't make your choices for you, and I can't control, yeah, your life circumstances or what you choose to do. Yeah. But where can I make a difference? Yeah. So we're interested to see, you know, and this is the beauty of this practice. Where can I make a difference? And so, for example, I can make sure that you know that I'm here for you when you need me. Mm. Yeah. If it's that in that relationship or in our practice, and again. Maybe I need to sit out this, you know, to kind of just accept that there's a whole internal kind of storm or dullness or something that's playing out. Yeah. But what is it that I can do with that? You know, so I can bring patience, yeah. I can keep the interest going and the showing up. There's something that we can do. And really remembering that there's always something we can do. Always something we can do, which includes showing up, yeah, being present. Yeah. And so how does this, I want to kind of bring it in a little bit more into our practice, the particular practice with these four sisters. You know, something that comes up for us when we do metta, compassion, mudita practice, we may be sending metta to someone and then the voice comes into our head or the feeling comes in and says, yeah, you know, but you can't actually change them or change the circumstances that they're facing right now. You know, it's not actually going to make a difference. And you know, here's where equanimity comes in. Yeah. And it might say, yes, that's true. Can I hold that? Yeah. Can I stay steady? Also with the not knowing, because, you know, yes, I can't change it in the way that I can't beam these magic. Sometimes we get a sense in metta practice, oh, you know, we're sending this magic formula and it's going to go, and it's going to go, and it's going to get that person, it's going to make their life. Like that, and it's There's beauty in that. But also, you know, the recognition that's not actually what's happening, or that's not actually the primary intention as we're practicing. And so the equanimity that says, yeah, that I can stay with that intention to wish well. Or, if it's too much, if it's overwhelming, I can bring the metta, the compassion, internally and work with the part of me here that really wishes, that's really tender, wanting for things to be okay for someone or for myself. And meeting that edge of the unknown, of the not knowing. So that kind of the capacity to then direct the practice where it needs to go. And also sometimes, you know, just to sit with that. That's the equanimity practice that we'll do today, with that tension. Which is also heartful and beautiful and powerful. And the remembering also with this, that these practices are primarily working on our own heart and mind. So there's all kinds of discussions sometimes in the practitioners' minds internally. Is this making a difference? Isn't it making a difference? Is it reaching that person or not? And there's also discussions amongst, you know, in the tradition about the impact. But I think the kind of really helpful, useful way of looking at Brahma-Vihara practices is that they are practices of intention, and we are actually working with our internal world, yeah, with our own heart and mind. That is our lab, that's where we're working. And so we're less invested in changing someone else's experience out there. Less invested in that. And we work internally. Equanimity really supports us to do that. And then the wisdom also reminds us that as we change ourselves, our own habits of heart and mind, that changes the world, because we're not separate from it. So that changes the world. We're each, and one way of seeing it is like we're each a node in this web of life. We change, the world changes, but also when we change, how we act in the world changes. Yeah? And so that has more ripples. So that kind of seeing it in that way, the impact. So equanimity, it's kind of really holding that deep aspiration, desire. We had that in the question response, for the well-being of all, the freedom from suffering for all. Really holding that. And I sometimes, you know, really say to people, you know, sometimes we feel like too humble to even hold that, but hold it, you know, feel it. If that comes up in your being, it's a beautiful, noble aspiration, the well-being of all, the freedom of suffering freedom from suffering for all. And holding that alongside that wisdom that remembers it's not just down to me. But I am, but each of us is a factor in that. But it's not just down to us. So both of those. And that can really allow us, support us to really practice wholeheartedly and act in the world wholeheartedly. We can hold that. And it can support us to apply what we can do when we can do it. And to really be kind of alive, awake beings. Seeing the opportunities and seeing the possibilities. And this can be really helpful at times when we may feel getting, there's too much sensitivity in the system, which can come when we practice. There's too much feeling so sensitive, everything just goes in. And the equanimity is there, and it supports us to hold our seat and to find the ground, and to find the space, and to let things kind of either move through us. You know, this is one way of working, and you know, saying, oh yeah, part of this network of life, and things can move through, or sometimes just kind of move, you know, by us. Yeah? And sometimes that would be a skillful equanimity practice, or in contact, but it's like the wind. You know? It doesn't flow through us, it flows around us. Yeah? So we can feel equanimity like that. Similarly, you know, when we're facing very intense pain, you know, either in ourselves or around us, that equanimity is a real resource. Actually, you know, when there's compassion, there's always equanimity. It has to be there, you know, to support us in compassion and compassionate action. So there's a lot of, if there's intense pain internally or we're facing it in the world, that capacity to hold our ground and also open the space. Yeah. So equanimity is both very grounded and very, very spacious. And we can lean in to one or the other as a useful response. And just kind of letting the, again, the same thing with the sensitivity, it's a similar thing, you know, letting it just move through, yeah, and let, you know, all kind of move by us, you know, around us like the wind does. And, you know, some of the images that I brought up with the compassion practice can be really helpful there. And sometimes feeling like, you know, sitting in the lap of the Buddha, or having the Buddha behind us, or the Dalai Lama, or Mary, you know, whoever symbolizes, or our grandparents, you know, whoever symbolizes compassion for us, feeling them there as kind of the bigger body, or the earth, you know, in which things are moving. So it's not just down to this one body, heart, mind to contain. So equanimity is really a ground for, I mentioned it last night, for all the Brahma-Vihara practices, particularly closely related to compassion. Yeah, very, very working together. And again, really emphasizing that cultivation internally in our own heart and mind. And sometimes, this isn't something I particularly, in myself, resonate with, but it can be really helpful to see in this way. Sometimes in the with the four Brahma-Viharas, equanimity is spoken of as the wisdom lens. Yeah. I don't particularly resonate with it because I think they're all wisdom. But it can be helpful, you know, to kind of distinguish it, because it has a slightly different frequency. But we can say, you know, just that kind of acknowledgement that there is also suffering in life, you know, the aging, you know, injury, sickness, you know, death, loss. These are part of the human condition, and that there is that suffering. And that is conditioned by countless conditions, many of which are not in our control. So that wisdom to see that, which allows us to also take things less personally, that comes back to that sense of letting them move through. And equanimity is also what allows us to be present with suffering, yeah, our own, another's, yeah, the world, without taking on too tightly the role of being the fixer or the solver, which is kind of where we naturally gravitate to a lot of the time when we meet suffering. It's like, oh, it's now my responsibility to fix or solve. And that actually moves us off balance, off center. You'll notice that in yourself, that movement. So it kind of brings us back, can be present, be here with this. And not take it all on me, not feel like it's just down to me to find the solution, to fix, or to solve. And that actually increases our capacity to respond. Because when we're in fixing, solving mode, usually quite a narrow vision. Yeah, and I don't know if you're noticing, my body gives better Dharma talks than my mind does. It just does that, and I talk about fixing solving mode, and my body leans forward and goes like that. And it's like, if you lean forward, yeah, you have less perspective. Yeah. So it's more narrow. Yeah. So it's actually that kind of resting back and equanimity with that spaciousness, that balance, increases our capacity to respond. Again, with the fixing and solving, the body also contracts. Hello, dukkha. Yeah. Contracts and has less movement, and the same with the mind. If we're kind of not narrow, fixated, kind of looking for, let's get a solution as quickly as possible, there's actually more possibilities of movement and of response that open up. And that larger perspective and that energy that is more available for us to act, to respond appropriately. So just before we practice, maybe to mention one more thing. I know it's a lot, and saying to Laura this morning, it's such a challenge to talk about equanimity because there's so much to say about it. But here's equanimity being practiced. Hopefully this is not the only time that you will hear about equanimity. Hopefully there's something useful in what has been said already. For you, I'm going to offer a practice that is going to be equanimity as it's practiced within the Brahma Viharas. But just to say, there's other ways of practicing it, and I will start the practice just by touching on one, but I want to name it because it may be more appropriate for you, which is kind of grounding and opening awareness. So it's very similar to what we've been doing already, only we're opening awareness to more than the body. So I sometimes call these vast awareness, or open awareness, or big mind. I've got a lot of names this type of practice. But we kind of just really open the space and have a sense then of life moving through in different ways. And that is also can be very helpful for cultivating equanimity. So I'll start the guided practice with that, and if it feels useful for you, stay with that. Don't necessarily go to the phrases and the beings, and also feel free to go to that practice through the day. And let's just stay with that. So if you need to stretch, stand up before we settle into a practice. Ready. You're invited to settle into your posture. Time to make any adjustments that are needed. And the body is as supported and balanced and steady as possible. And bringing the awareness to the contact sensations. Inviting the awareness to gather, collect in that, those sensations of contact. Resting into the contact. Maybe helpful to just expand from the sense of contact to the whole base of the body. And if you're standing, it can be flowing up and feeling the whole lower part of the body as a base. You're sitting, whole lower part, kind of from the hips down. Steady base. Like the roots and trunk of a tree or the base of a mountain. From there, allowing, inviting the awareness to open, expand, to more and more of the body. Staying with those images, it's like the branches of the tree growing out, expanding out, or the whole of the mountain rising up into space. Getting a sense of the whole body here, rooted, grounded, and also awareness open and expansive. If this is helpful, you can stay here just with a sense of that groundedness and openness, the rootedness and expansiveness and life just moving through, whether it's an anchor of breath or sound, body sensations arising and passing through that space. Maybe helpful sometimes for some of us to open the awareness more, actually extend it out to sounds that we hear, or the space of the whole room. Feeling how awareness permeates, fills the body space. It's actually so much faster vast awareness, sounds appear and are known and then they disappear. And the breath appears as known and disappears. And the body life also appears as known and disappears. All of it appearing within a vast awareness, vast knowing, very spacious, and in itself also very still. Take a few minutes here. Maybe that you need to re-establish that opening, the vastness of awareness. Finding how vast is kind of accessible and useful for you. The emphasis in the practice on resting into that awareness and the spaciousness of it. And meeting, knowing, receiving experience from there. Naturally lessening the demand, not picking only the pleasant sounds. Allowing, opening all sounds. All aspects of the breath. All arising, appearing in awareness. And in the time also passing from awareness. When distractions arise, we can see them also as appearances and awareness, not getting entangled. allowing them to appear and move through awareness just like the sounds of the breath. Resting our attention, our presence in awareness itself, in the knowing, in the vastness. In this vastness of appearances appearing, being known and in their time disappearing, coming to the sense of your own heart, mind, body, being, also known in this awareness. Helpful. Just using a phrase or two to support that intention and cultivation of equanimity. May I find ease in the midst of it all. May I find ease in the midst of it all. Letting the words and the intention of the phrase also ripple through that field of awareness. May I find ease in the midst of it all. Steadiness with the joys and sorrows of life. go of that flow of equanimity with yourself, but keeping that vastness open, the grounding, that resting in the knowing of the appearing and disappearing of all phenomena. Opening to the presence of someone for whom you don't have a particular sense of closeness or difficulty. Probably easiest, someone here on the retreat, maybe even sitting close to you. We call the neutral relationship. Bringing that person to awareness, knowing that they experience joy and sorrow. Circumstances that are conditioned. Feeling the wish for them to know well-being and freedom from suffering. And letting that flow of equanimity be guided towards them as well. May you find ease in the midst of it all. Steadiness within the flow of joys and sorrows. May you find ease in the midst of it all. And gently expanding to all of us here. To all of us at Gaia House. All of us, this whole surrounding area, fields and woodlands and hamlets, villages and towns. May we all find ease in the midst of it all. Expanding further sense beings. Those in the air and in the water. On the earth and in the earth. May all beings everywhere find ease in the midst of it all. Find steadiness within the joys and sorrows of life. May all beings everywhere find deep stillness and peace. Full day of practice today, taking time to feel how you would like to, what you would like to dedicate it to. Maybe any of the Brahmaviharas, it doesn't have to be a pekka. Having a sense, what would be a good use for you today, and just staying with that. Just really saying what happens when we dedicate. If you choose to work with the pekka, just to recap, this, we did a combo in this guided practice, and you can do a combination or choose one thread more than the other. That sense of the groundedness and the vastness, the spaciousness of the knowing, resting into the knowing, into the awareness, and experiencing the movement of things from there. And you can do it with a particular anchor, just the breath, just the sounds. Or you can do it as we're doing now, it's kind of a more open, a receptivity. And you can then drop in the phrases, or only do the practice with the phrases. And I was just offering a couple here. With equanimity practice, often it is helpful for most people to just use one or two phrases rather than more. So the ones I offered were, ease in the midst of it all, or steadiness with the joys and sorrows. There's other possibilities, but for another time. And we can very much do that in the walking, of course, as well. Use the phrases in the walking the way we've been doing. Have a sense of vastness, especially if you're outdoors, but even also indoors. When we're in movement, we can actually connect to a sense of the vastness through which we're moving. And also of the grounding. So walking practice or movement practice is very grounding in itself, and we can lean into that. Contact of the earth. If you liked the kind of the suggestion to make the footsteps of metta from a few days ago, you could make them footsteps of equanimity. So it can be peace with every step, or ease, steadiness, just with the sense of that contact with the earth, and really connecting both to earth as a metaphor for equanimity. And also space. It's also stopping and looking up at the sky can really be something that opens that up for us.